love song for the world. I just wanna write a song about a boy and a girl. Junkies on the corner.
Yeah, yeah. I love that song. That to me, it's such a celebrative song. And if you haven't seen the watch the whole video, a lot of good dancing and people playing. This is the second part of a series called Everything is Spiritual. Last Sunday, Dustin, the associate pastor, talked about nature. And I'm going to talk about music this morning. And I know nothing about music theory or hymnology. I can't play an instrument. I was watching Abby up here and doing the little spoon thing. And I was thinking, you know, I can't do either singing or the spoons, much less both. How do people do that? And that's apparently a rather elementary instrument. But I love music, and I'm grateful for the gift that it is to all of us. Some music is just fun. Some music is soothing to the soul. Listen to this introduction to Stranded, a song by Van Morrison. Some music is a celebration of love. Man, love is the answer, at least for most of the questions in my heart. Like, why are we here and where do we go? And how come we're so hard? It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars and we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. And some music. Some music isn't music. Sorry. Music is a powerful influence. It serves as a conduit of truth. It serves as a carrier of consolation. Think about it for a second. At a funeral, in a desire to comfort people who are grieving, a pastor does not say, "All right, reading from the book of Leviticus," to what invariably does a pastor direct our hearts? Psalms. The Psalms. Songs of praise is simply what the Psalms are. I'll even call music a formative medium. I think it shapes us, that it shapes our heart. In Colossians chapter 3, we read these verses. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly. That has the sound of spiritual formation. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another. And here's the means. With all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. Singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. The domain is in your hearts. To God. Primary avenue seems to be through music. Hymns, songs of from the Spirit. That's an interesting phrase, songs from the Spirit. I mean, exegetically, I don't know what that means, but you know, does it mean that So therefore, does the Spirit choose only Christ followers to create songs of beauty and truth and consolation? And sadly, but all those pagan artists out there are sentenced to merely three chords of crap. Therefore, should we listen only to Christian artists and their Christian music, and we'll recognize them by the t-shirts they sell? And if a song doesn't have specific mention of Jesus, then we can know it's not Christian or good or beautiful or holy. I don't think so. It's all spiritual. Here's what I mean by that. In the Genesis account, chapter of 1, is a creation account. Most of us are familiar with that. And we're told that man is created in the image of God. Chapter 3 is the fall of man. And man rebels against God. Time progresses. Chapter 9, post-fall. And we see this, these words. In the image of God has God created man. Post-fall, still the image of God. After the fall, we're still created, not just Christ followers, all of us in the image of God. So whether one's a Christ follower or not, a person still on some level reflects the creativity of God. A person still on some scale reflects the beauty of God, the comfort of God. So that phrase, songs from the Spirit, I don't doubt that the Spirit gives songs. The Spirit gives lyrics, composing abilities to artists who may not even give God a second thought, but nonetheless, they are image bearers of His. Here's an interesting take on that. A blogger I read recently said this, quote, "A non-Christian artist might be more honest than some Christian artists. The former are sometimes better at writing what they feel, whereas Christian artists, particularly contemporary Christian artists, write what they should feel." So here's my two-minute theology of faith and music. Christian faith is rational, but it's not merely rational. It's transrational, i.e., it's beyond reason. Reason will only take us so far. The mind cannot fully grasp nor fully comprehend God. So if you think you've got it all figured out, it's not God you've got figured out. Faith isn't irrational, it's transrational, beyond reason. Unfortunately, since the Reformation, Protestantism has primarily focused on the mind and logical deductive reasoning and exegesis. And not that there's anything wrong with that, I just don't think it takes us far enough, and ignored or downplayed the heart. God accesses and opens our hearts to encounter us. Music is also transrational. There's certainly a rational component in most music, but we don't listen to music because of its deductive logical brilliance. We don't say or reply after a song, our response isn't, "Oh, what was her third point sequentially?" Huh. Because it moves us on a heart level. That's why half the music written is called love songs, not logic songs. I said earlier that music's a medium of truth. And for our purposes this morning, I'm defining truth in this manner. It's greater than this, but for our purposes, is truth is that which corresponds to reality. For example, if I were to tell you this morning that when a person becomes a Christ follower, all problems go away and there is joy beyond measure every day and every day and every day, and it just gets better and better and better. Is that true? I.e., does that correspond to reality? I don't think so either. Even though decades ago there was a Christian chorus composed by a Christian, and the lyrics went, "Every day with Jesus is sweeter than the day before. Every day with Jesus, I love Him more and more."
Really?
So Christians can compose falsehood, and unbelievers can compose truth.
Go figure.
But here's, I believe that God reveals his love, compassion through whatever the artist is, and uses the means of music to do it. But here's what I think really happens. I don't think it's just that this particular artist and this particular song gets me, but that God is revealing himself through this song to tell us he gets us, that he knows, that he understands. On a whimsical note, I'm a parrot head. I love Jimmy Buffett. And he sings songs that speak truth to me, i.e. that correspond to reality, or my reality anyway. In the winter, when I crawl into my fetal position around the 1st of October and hate the next 4 months, and I'm watching, I should love the gray, the snow, the frigid temperatures, and many of you are frolicking in it, but Buffett speaks my truth.
This morning, I shot 6 holes in my freezer. I think I got cabin fever. Somebody sound the alarm.
That's me. We'll get serious. I'd said that music gets to our hearts, and it's not merely the artist or the band that gets us or understands us, but much, much more is going on, that it's God himself attempting to tell us he gets us, he understands. There's a genre of psalms called the Psalms of Lament. Psalm 42 is one of them, and you hear such words, phrases like this: my soul pants, my soul thirsts, my tears have been my food day and night. My soul is downcast. I say to God, why have you forgotten me? But in the middle of this lament are tucked these 4 words. Deep calls to deep. In the midst of our chaos, while we feel like we're stumbling blindfolded in the dark, when your heart aches so much that you're not praying for healing, you're praying to survive, deep calls to deep. The deep of God's consolation calls to the deep of our desolation. In the deep of my darkness, the deep of God's light calls to me. In the deep of my anguish, the deep of God's mercy calls to us. And I found that music is a medium that bypasses my defenses, overcomes my walls, and the deep of God's heart touches and embraces the depths of my own heart. And deep is called to deep in several hellish seasons of my life. In my early 20s, backdrop was I was born and raised in a very, very, very conservative and legal church and family and entire subculture, and was very sheltered and very socially backward and inept. And when you graduated from high school in our church, it was expected that you go to Bible college. So I went to Bible college. And while there, fell in love with a beautiful girl, and we married, and it was disastrous. We had our eyes closed, but before the honeymoon was over, our eyes began to open to the dysfunction that each of us brought into the marriage and to the pathology of the relationship. We tried and we tried, we prayed, we pleaded till we were empty of words, got professional help, and nothing of significance changed. And I was dying. Just, it was killing me. She was killing me, not by intent. She was dying in this relationship. 3 years later, we just couldn't do it anymore. And we divorced. And this is against everything I believe. You got to understand, divorce was not even in my vocabulary, not even in my comprehension. And I'm doing the very thing that was so far from my entire world. More tragically, this happening violated everything I believed about God, because I was sure that God would not lead me into a marriage and have me in Bible college and then allow my marriage to blow all to hell. I was a broken man. I felt rejected by God, rejected by her. It was 1973, and the Marshall Tucker Band came out with a song called "Can't You See?" Can't you see? Can't anybody see? And deep called to deep. I was raging against God, but beneath my rage was anguish. And though I wasn't listening at this point, God was assuring my heart that indeed he knew what this was doing to me, that he understood. Looking back, it's as if God was saying to me through this song, I do see. We divorced that same year, following year unbearable. I felt so much shame. In the 60s and 70s, in the fundamentalist / evangelical subculture, divorce was tantamount to being a failure as a Christian. You did not divorce. Christians don't do that. And on a more essential level, I felt as a failure as a man and a human being. I felt worthless as I looked at all my peers and their seemingly happy marriages and their glowing faith. I can still remember standing in the apartment, sometimes with my hands raised pleading, and other times my fists raised, raging against the universe for reducing me to nothing. And deep, called to deep. I know it's a different genre than you're used to, but Neil Diamond came out with I Am, I Said, and this was me.
But I got an emptiness deep inside that I've tried, but it won't let me go. And I'm not a man who likes to swear, but I never cared for the sound of being alone. I am, I said, to no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. I am, I cried. I am lost and I can't even say why.
nobody gets me. During this season of my life, I was so angry at God, I didn't connect the dots. God was saying to me, I get you. I understand. That song served another purpose as well. It gave expression to angst that I was unable to articulate. And I think that's another whole redemptive purpose of music, that God puts into music. One of the blogs I subscribe to is called A Deeper Story. And this writer reflects back on her early adolescence. After another tumultuous visit with a psychiatrist, I laid in bed tonight with my headphones plugged into my boombox, where In Utero by Nirvana spun away, giving me all the shouts and growls I dared not utter. I think God gives each of us music as a means of giving expression to what we either dare not or do not know how to express. Several years of this darkness elapsed, and deep kept calling to deep and wooed me back and began to heal and restore not only my broken heart, but my dismantled faith. Fast forward a number of years, a couple decades, 80s, 90s, and I didn't identify with a lot of the music being created and performed, go figure. Sorry, 80s, 90s folks. Some of the contemporary Christian music became meaningful to me at that point. Some of Rich Mullins' stuff I thought was very authentic and honest. Some of the Hillsong praise and worship really moved me. David Crowder. But I still listened a whole lot of music that was not CCM. And Van Morrison was always prominent. Sometimes his music serves to remind me of the love of my life for 36 years now.
I can hear her heartbeat from 1,000 miles. Yeah, the heavens open every time she smiles. And when I come to her, that's where I belong. Yet I run into her like a river song. She gave me love, she gave me love, she got a fine sense of humor.
There are times when his music points me to the God who transcends all of our understanding.
Hear the sailors cry, smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic. And where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. And when the foghorn blows, I want to hear it. I don't have to fear that I want to rock your gypsy soul. Just like way back in the days of old. How magnificently we will fold into the mystic.
Yeah, I know, not exactly evangelical terminology, whatever. I long for the day of homecoming when I encounter God who is beyond all our categories of comprehension. Fast forward further. Backdrop. I've always wrestled with depression. It never leaves. It just sometimes it fades into the background waiting. About 3 years ago, for whatever reasons, it asserted itself, and it's been in the foreground and nearly nonstop. And other than the crisis of faith in the 70s and one other incident between, it's been the most difficult 2.5 years of my life. And the depression decided to recruit an ally, and anxiety enlisted, and it's been brutal. But during this time period, I also became acquainted with the Avett Brothers. They're a band out of North Carolina, a couple brothers, Seth and Scott, guitar and banjo, a couple guys on, not a couple guys on double bass, one guy on double bass, another gentleman on cello and drums. And they're, a lot of their music's melancholy, but it doesn't further depress me, it soothes my soul. God uses it to bring comfort. And I'm drawn to their lyrics, not merely their instruments. There's times, particularly in the last 3 years, when the lenses through which I look at life and my faith and my relationships, those lenses get very dark. And it becomes difficult to see any goodness or mercy or beauty at all. And there's times, and I have my moments, when it's just, why bother? This faith thing isn't working. My life isn't working. And the music of the Avett Brothers serves to kind of wipe the grime off the lenses and helps me keep perspective. Listen to an excerpt from a song of theirs called February 7th.
Something real. I traded what I know for how I feel. But the ceiling and the walls collapsed upon the darkness I was trapped. And as the last of breath was drawn,
second line, I traded what I know for how I feel. That was a colossal mistake I made in the 70s. I knew where truth lies, but my life wasn't working out in light of how I felt. Pitched it. Colossal mistake. I paid dearly. I've learned some things. Now, no matter how low I feel or alone or alienated or disenfranchised, it may describe me. It does not define me. And I know the truth which transcends all these feelings of a given season. As the Avett say, the light broke in, and it did. And they talk about rest. I'm rested. And I experienced rest of soul and spirit. And I trust, not only it did back then, I trust I will again. A similar theme is found in a song of theirs called 10,000 Words. And we all have these choices, a choice of two paths, and they're called various things, but purpose, pleasure. Listen to these words.
And in disbelief, says I'm too caught up. They say young is good and old is fine and truth is cool, but all that matters is you have your good times.
The lyrics of these songs serve to center me. I mean, this song is countercultural. Culture would say, all that matters is that you have our good times, as they talk about. This song, in essence, says, truth, ultimately, is all that matters. But this song serves another purpose, too. God delivers some uncomfortable truth in it. I'm no different. We love to talk on things we don't know about. Kind of tempers me and causes me to ask myself, well, who am I to judge people for talking beyond what they know or experience? It makes me admit that I blow smoke as much as anybody. And prompts me to live out of my true self, not my false self that always needs embellishing and needs recognized. Through their music, I'm also reminded to verbalize and express love to those that I care about, and to do it now while the opportunity is available, rather than lamenting when it's too late.
Every night after and every day since, I found myself crying when the memory hits. Sometimes it knocks me down, sometimes I can just put it away.
Grieving over words unspoken and it being too late, I think God through this song is saying to us, express your love today. Language has a double meaning. The lyrics which follow had a particular meaning to Seth Avitt when he penned these words. I hear them and they mean something very different to me, but nonetheless inspiring and comforting. We do this with scripture. It's just the nature of language. back in the day in the 70s, there was a segment of the church that talked about the Word of God, and they said there's it's twofold. There's the Logos or the Logos, the objective Word, and then there's the Rhema, the subjective Word. I don't think you can justify that biblically. I think they're interchanged in the Greek text, but it's a great idea, though. The objective, the subjective. They have a song called A Father's First Spring, and that's one example. The objective meaning was the celebration of the birth of a baby, kind of a horizontal meaning, a fellow human being. But for me, there's a profound vertical meaning in this song. It's about God for me. I do not live unless I live in your light.
I never lived till I lived in your light. My heart never beat like it does at the sight of you, baby blue. God bless your light. I do not live less, I live in your light. I do not live less, I live in your light. I do not live.
The music points me to God. It's true. I never lived till I lived in his light. You know, as I look back on my life, the paradoxes, the contradictions are stark. There's been unspeakable loss, sometimes unbearable grief. There's been seasons of merciless trauma, and yet deep was always calling to deep. On the other hand, I've had unparalleled joy. I've experienced beauty beyond description. God has bestowed grace that's dropped me to my knees. This last excerpt is a fitting description of life, and it serves to express my own gratitude to God.
Some right and some wrong, and I let some love go I wish wasn't gone. These things and more I wish I had not done, but I done. I can't go back, I don't want to, 'cause all my mistakes they brought me to
the journey so far has been a combination of gory and glory. Heartache mingled with beauty and joy. I've sinned deeply, been sinned against. I've made costly, costly mistakes. And all of it has brought me to God. All of it has brought me to this very moment of faith. Deep, deep has always and always will call to deep. And it's often through the medium of music. I'll end by sharing something that happened just this past week. And totally by surprise, I wasn't looking for it, anticipating it, expecting it. I was preparing this talk and I was on YouTube looking up songs and trying to calculate precise start times, end times for these excerpts, and it wasn't going really well. And and there's a I'm a Deadhead too. I love the Grateful Dead, and I was gonna put a song of theirs on here, and I didn't. But they have a song called Ripple, and I've always liked this song. And if I have music played at my funeral, it will be one of those songs. And I was weighing whether or not to play it, and I noticed on the sidebar said it's some other homemade video by someone playing the violin and playing Ripple. And I thought, well, this is interesting. And so I thought I'd check it out. And there's a guy accompanying on guitar and is strumming some chords. And a young woman begins playing the violin, playing Ripple. And she's just doing very basic single string, I don't know. Just after a minute or two, it's kind of like, okay, geez. And all of a sudden, unexpectedly, she breaks out into these riffs that go all over the place and these soaring crescendos, and I find myself sobbing. I mean, I'm shocked at what I'm doing because I was fine. I mean, shoulders heaving, sobbing. And my first impulse was, suck it up and act like a man. But instead, I just let myself kind of go with it and just sat there, cried, and then it just kept going. I cried for a long time, and I just sat in the silence, and after some time, just it kind of into my consciousness, these words came, and it just said, there's beauty in the mess. There's still beauty in the mess. What's the strangest thing is that, well, God in His grace, when I was not looking for it, I was not expecting it, in the process of preparing this talk, did the very thing to me that I'm talking to you about. Does that make sense? He brought music on a soul level, and I got blindsided by grace. Another blogger, Elora Nicole, sums it up so well. She says, here's the real truth. The beauty you find in the midst of the deep dark when light breaks through the cracks is some of the most breathtaking. May deep call to deep through the music that God brings into your life. I'm going to have just pronounce a benediction, and then we're all dismissed. If you're interested, there's a video of her playing the violin solo of Ripple. If you want to hang around, listen to it, fine. No obligation at all.